You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries, find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints up in Boston.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams. Breaking day, we'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is not like
everything else. They just were too realistic to be
frozen like a tree.
The hand
was creeping
into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot lives in a movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
What you think I've seen? Some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his typist knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, for a little hell, out in the St. John's walls, Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Discardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Discardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Whoa, top drama, man. Feel like $1 million. Wish I had it. I just feel like it at this point in time. I got to tell you, I got to do some shout-outs to Billy Green, a girl, Connie Gilbert, up there in Canada where the leaves are changing, Mr. Dave Owen in New Mexico, my good buddy Jan Allen down there in Georgia. I hate the town, don't hate the state. Rosebud, how are you, Rosebud? Sasquatch. I'm a little suspect of without Sasquatch. The way they're spelling it. My secret, there's the gentle giant. How are you, Steve-O? Miss you, buddy. A couple of people out there who are incognito tonight. They're called guests. Well, I got to tell you, I've been getting a lot of emails from people all over the world, all over the globe, everybody. All telling me, Mr. T, Mr. TB, Mr. TCB. He was all my initials. He's taking care of business, for those who don't know. You were right. We're totally right. I know I was right, okay? I know I was right. I said it way back then. I'm going to say it again. It's going to be redundant. It's going to be deja vu. Careful. Watch out. Don't think that you're walking on 2x4 or 4x8. It's thin ice, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of promises have been made around this world by a lot of people. I'll tell you right now, those promises have not been kept. Just look around. Heard me say it last week. You heard me talk about it the week before. And you hear me talking about it all the time. What do you need? A sharp stick to hit you in the eye? Last month, unemployment up 14.9%. Housing situation didn't go down. It went up. Outrageous across the country, okay, 16.2%. You people realize what's going around us? And you're right, Jan Allen, it's not the state, it's just the people. There's just a bunch of bad apples out there, good buddy. Thank you, I stand to be corrected. because there's good and forthright people like yourselves instead of scumbags that we've all met one time or another. Not the state, it's the people. You're exactly right. Hat off to you. Great show ahead of us tonight. You know, by popular demand, we got Miss Becky Butello on. Instead of Don Monroe telling the story, we got her on tonight. I'll tell you, she's a fine gal, too. At the same point in time, we've got something that's happening. It's going on now, folks, up there in New Mexico. Our brethren, Dave O, TC, John Lee, Marcus and his brother Mario, wasn't for them, we wouldn't have known about it. That's new people in the trenches, folks.
Yeah, Tom, Mike didn't make it on. Something's wrong, probably.
Okay.
And I haven't been able to contact him, so we go on with Marcus and Mario and Dave.
Yeah, we'll put him on later. Don't worry about it, okay?
No, I'm not.
Let's get out there to New Mexico, folks, and hear the whole story from start to finish. Yeah, who's this?
Well, this is Marcus. It's Mario.
Hello. This is Tom Biscardi. How are you, son?
We're doing good.
How's the weather up there?
Nice and dry.
Good. That's a good thing. Now, look here. I'll set the stage for you and your brother and for Dave O. It's a compelling story. We've heard them. Similar stories, but not as fresh as yours. Of course, yours is going on as we speak. Is that correct?
Yes, ours is still going on.
That's a good thing. So here's what I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to tell everybody it happened about your brother, Mario, about 7-8 days ago, coming home. He saw and heard things that he's never seen and heard before. Why don't you take it from there?
Okay, it was, this is Mario. It was going on about 3 a.m. in the morning, and I was walking home, and, there was a little light out that night, early that morning. I was walking up a big hill, and I had some things on my mind, and I was coming to, I was thinking to myself, shall I not, or shall I walk through this canyon? Or shall I go on the high ground so I can be safe? See what's down below. So I took the high ground, and I thought I'd start making my way down towards the surface. And when I started going down the hill, I could see some strides in front of me, and I could see my way through that night through the moonlight, and the strides in front of me were about maybe 4.5, 5.5 feet in width. So I was telling myself something big must have been coming this way. So then I looked up, and I saw this nice big figure in front of me from about maybe 75 feet. So I didn't want to go that way. I was a little shooken up. Thought I was brave that night, but I wasn't going to go towards whatever was in front of me. So it was walking my way, just casually, and I was walking too. Real windy, and we stopped, and then I could smell something. Maybe one of his camouflages he used, either some kind of human waste. I smelled something funky in the air. And we circled each other. He was walking through that valley, and I was circling around him through the higher ground. And I was kind of worried that he was going to follow me, so I didn't know if he was or wasn't. So I just decided to jog my way back home.
What happened next?
What happened next is I went back to my house because from where I came into my house was probably about a mile. And I told my brother what happened because my brother is into Bigfoots and everything. And I told him I seen one again. But this one, I seen it in the nighttime instead of in the afternoon.
That's when your brother actually took the ball and ran with it then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it wasn't for you, you were the one that actually, you know, initiated this whole thing, seen it all happen. So, Marcus, now that you took the ball and ran with it, what'd you do next?
What do you mean, like, I took the ball?
Well, you made the phone calls and started making inquiries all over, right?
Well, the thing about it, though, is my brother, it's not the first time that he saw something like this. The first time he didn't want me to say anything because he didn't want anybody the first time around to think that, oh, my brother's crazy or all this other stuff. But this time around, I looked him in the eye and I told him, so you know what, Mario, I believe you this time. And I was like, but this time we're not going to let it go by. And it's like, this is not 2.5 hours away. This is right down where from where we live. So I did my best. That's what I heard. I was like, Tom Biscardi. So I went to your website, went to your contact you, and that's when I decided to get things rolling. See, maybe if we could get you guys down here, or if you could get your team down here as soon as you could. Or basically, do your stuff.
Do our job.
I like it.
Yeah, no, I like that. All right, so at that point in time, yeah, you're right. You contacted me. I saw the video. Now, Marco Beal, where can our listeners out there follow this story on the website? Because everything's so cluttered. I don't know where the hell it is.
Well,
neither. So
if you go up on www.bigfootlive.com, www.bigfootlive.com, and you look at the show, the guest list for the show, and you look under Tom Interviews Marcus, Mario, and Dave. Under that listing, you will see two links. One link is to the website where all the pictures and the stories are, Marcus's email, Dave's report, and pictures of Marcus and Mario and Dave. And then the second link is a video link of a video interview that Dave Ortiz did with Mario. That's www.bigfootlive.com under the guest appearance tonight show.
Okay,
Mario.
Let me understand this because I'm a moron. There's a couple of dots in this thing now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if everybody can go up there and they click on those links, they'll actually see what Mario and Marcus saw and Dave O's report, correct?
That's correct.
I got to tell you something, Mario. And Dave, are you on also? Is Dave O on?
Dave, hit your *7 button, buddy.
Okay, I just got it.
Oh, okay.
Hey, thank you so much. I hope you got that email back that I sent to you, Dave. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You did an excellent job. Get a chance, Dave, to get out there again that nighttime?
No, it was raining that night. That's what happened. And we couldn't get out there. It was just too muddy and too dangerous and dark to be out there that night. It was a Saturday night, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we didn't get a chance to get out.
Have you been out since then?
Pardon?
Have you been out since then, since last Saturday?
No, we hadn't, Tom. I hadn't had a chance to get out there.
All right, so the time that you did the filming and did your report, tell us in your words, Dave-O. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a little background on Dave-O. Dave-O has been out with me on, I don't know how many expeditions, 1, 2, 3, 4, how many, Dave?
Oh, several. At least five or six.
Five or six, okay. And he knows what to look for. He knows what to photograph. And as a matter of fact, he knows a lot more than a lot of others out there. So give us, in your words, what you've seen, pictures you took, and your bottom line, what you think we got out there.
Okay. Yeah, we found a parking spot that we could go walk down. It was not very far from a mobile home neighborhood. And the area, first of all, is actually kind of unremarkable. You know, it's just a high desert, southwest look, you know, just rocks, some bushes, and salt cedar. And we came to a bottom of what we call a wash. It's just an area like a dry stream bed. There was a little bit of water trickling through there, and right away after we got into the wash, Marcus and Mario pointed out to me, look, here's the impression that we found, and sure enough, we had a they also had some measuring tape too. So I looked at it and I said, that's a big impression, and we measured it at 19 inches by I think it was 8.5 inches, I believe, wide, and we found some more tracks, too. It went up just right above the wash, and then it turned around again and actually walked down on its heels. We measured those at about... the heels were actually quite small because it was just the back of the foot, but the stride was like about 4 feet, which was very similar to what we found back in the cave not far away from there. Just looking at the terrain and rocks moved, there was actually some river rock that was on the hillside immediately that were actually pushed out of their positions. So we assumed that something heavy had moved those rocks. We also checked out the area downstream of the wash, and there's an old mobile home park. It's where mobile homes are stored after they've been traded in. And we found things that were out of the ordinary, too. We had gone there for a second time during the daytime. I think it was the next day after with some other people just to check it out. And we noticed Marcus noticed that there were pieces of wood and planking that was moved around that wasn't in the same position as it was the day before. And there was also one spot, I guess this is where another person came down from the mobile home park and was just wondering what we were doing. And after he felt comfortable with us, I asked him, I think his name was Preston. I said, have you ever seen any strange things out here, you know, during the night? He says, he told me all the time. And so he started divulging what he'd seen, and he'd seen, like, apparitions were walking 2 feet above the ground. And he said they're about 6 to 7 foot tall. I said, are they glowing? He says, well, they're kind of white-colored, he said, in the dark. They're white. And not only that, but he said that there was in between some of the trailers, there's a picture, actually, where we're standing. And that's my father back there, by the way. He wanted to go check this out, too. In the picture, the photo that you see, there was, Preston said there was a bonfire, like, very frequently that occurs. He could actually see the reflection of fire in these trailers. And we stepped right in there and looked around, and there's no evidence of fire, but he says, you got to believe me, this happens all the time. Sometime in the future, I'm going to take my camera and night vision and go, if I can find Preston again, go stay behind his backyard and just wait for something to happen. It's really interesting. But and another thing we saw was a bicycle that's in the middle of this wash next to that trailer park thing. It's a nice bike. It's a huffy bike that's just laying there in the middle of the wash, and it looks, I could see some very faint tracks, but it looks like they're kind of moving away. What it looked like, somebody had might have seen something they didn't like, just dropped their bike and just got out of there. We did find one trailer that did have some occupation. It looked like maybe a homeless person might be living there. I kind of wanted to find this person. We couldn't find them or see if they've had any, you know, encounters of any sort. But overall, I listened to Marcus and Mario's story, and they were telling me some stuff that was just that actually coincided with some of the sightings and the encounters that have been occurring across the San Juan River. We were on the north side of the river, and, you know, when we were doing our expeditions with you, Tom, that was in the south side. There was stuff that had some connection, especially like the footprints, the 19-inch footprints, the 4-foot strides, very similar to the cave that we were investigating previously. So I we came to a conclusion that these men did indeed have an encounter, and we still need to investigate that area quite thoroughly in the future. You know, keep it watching. I do believe that this was somewhat passing through there, and what I didn't realize, I just asked somebody, I said, do you think that Bigfoot might be on the north side of the river here? You know, it's actually the area is called Kirtland, and they said, I don't know, I've never heard any stories. So this does confirm that these creatures are moving around, even within that little village area, so inside the village area, which is, it just makes me quite sober to think about that these things are wandering around neighborhoods now. But nevertheless...
Well, it's blowing my mind, too. So where's the closest cover to these residential areas? Is there a cave?
Yeah.
I remember the caves that we went out in. It was right next to the town.
Right. This would be probably about, 3 miles across the river. So actually this area has no true cover other than that trailer park. And we did suspect that the trailer park, it's not a trailer park, but it's just a, you know, where you park old trailers, that they may be using that trailer for cover. They may be using it for shelter. We couldn't really determine that because there's so many broken trailers, and there's a lot of junk around. Now, there was another circumstance up there. I guess it happened earlier that week. There was a trailer that actually caught on fire in a hill, and I heard from some personnel that are in the Valley Fire Department there that they saw three dark beings running out of a trailer right, I guess, at the moment of ignition. I don't know who saw this, but I think they also saw some tracks that looked very peculiar around the area, too. They probably got all stomped off during the process of quelling the fire down. But there were three beings. I asked them, did they look human? I mean, they were just normal people. They said they really couldn't tell, but they looked large. So I don't know how Bigfoot could start a fire, but it almost sounds like maybe there could be a connection possibly to that, too. And then Marcus and Amara had the encounter soon after, so it's very possible that those creatures may have been involved in that fire. Maybe there were flammables inside the trailer. But yeah, that area does seem to have some unusual activity of all sorts, and it's very interesting. I do want to go and investigate that very shortly from now.
Hey, well, let me ask you this. What do you think they're coming down now out of the mountains and caves? Is it the food source drying up?
You know, that does sound like a possibility. We are having a very dry season this year in the Southwest. There's probably not a lot of food this year. The snow is probably melting out faster this year, too. I have a feeling that they may be searching for food. And with that food, they may be entering some of these rural neighborhoods at the same time. So, yeah, I do believe that may be quite a possibility that we are dealing with some hungry Bigfoot.
Yeah. That's what I'm surmising. Well, listen, what you need to do now is just keep us totally abreast, all three of you. Marcus, Mario, you know that you got a brother in with you. Dave is there, the rest of the crew. Did you ever get a hold of John Lee, Marcus?
Yeah, I got a hold of me and John Lee. We started talking about. I started asking him, since when did you become a Bigfoot hunter? And then he says, Big John never thought this would ever happen to me. But I said, well, I guess for him and me being two giants that we are as natives, and I guess it was only funny that a real life Bigfoot would come to us. So. Me and John were cracking up about that, and he says, why does always the crazy things got to happen to us? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's fate. And I was like, maybe it's fate that the Bigfoot you're chasing came to me, so I don't know. Or came my way, or my brother ended up stumbling upon it. But yeah, I got in contact with him, and he said that he was having some stuff going on in his area that is... over there, I guess, in New Mexico, but Hogback, which is not too far from where we are. He said that either Thursday or Friday that we were going to, he was going to invite us to show us around what he's doing, what's going on with them, and everything on their side, and that if we want to go back to our side to let him know, and Dave-O right there said that he's got stuff with his college things he's got to get things done with, or get his education squared away with, and then we'll be over that way, and that he can help us. But yeah, me and John, we talked for a while. We got everything down to a T.
Well, I'm glad to see that it's all in play right now. Marcus, it's an honor to have you on our show, you and your brother, and of course, Dave-O.
Hey, Tom, can I say something?
Why not?
I'm sorry for interrupting, but could I say something that's very important that the listeners aren't aware of?
Yeah.
Okay, this took place on the 24th, Thursday the 24th, at 3 o'clock in the morning. Marcus sent an email to Tom and myself. I opened the email earlier in the morning when I got to work, but I didn't call Marcus until 8 o'clock my time, which was 9 o'clock his time. Okay? And I left a voicemail for Marcus. Marcus called me back at 11 o'clock, and he told me everything. I quickly called Alex Hearn. Marcus said him and his brother were going back to take a look at things and to take a look at the footprints and things. And I told Marcus that we'd try to get somebody to give him some aid in making sure we didn't miss anything and give him instructions on anything that might be pertinent to taking a look at things. Alex called Dave, and within the hour of that call, Dave was down there and met Marcus and Mario, and they were there. Now, that's an hour between reacting. That's pretty darn quick, I think. And Dave Ortiz, well, everybody connected with it, Marcus, everybody just coordinated and worked together so well. And I thought that was just an excellent example of how this system works and how well it works. And that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to give that input. And Dave Ortiz, thanks so much for what you've done.
Thank you, Marco Bill and Tom.
You know, it's so well stated, Marco, and I got to tell you something. It's a long time coming, but, you know, we've built this. It's going on 5 years now, Marco, with the radio station. It's 7 years with us being in this thing full time. And we've built this social network of Bigfoot researchers across the country, okay? It doesn't stop there. It goes on and on and on. It never stops, because each and every day we add on to our network around the globe. And it's such a wonderful thing that, my gosh, one goes to two go to 10 go to 100, 100 go to thousands. Who knows how big this network is really going to reach to? But I'll tell you this. I'm honored. I'm totally honored. You have to see the video that Dave-O took of Marcus and his brother. It blew me away. He honored me like you wouldn't believe. I like his verbiage. I like his terminology. I can't wait to meet you, Marcus, and your brother.
You just brought up an interesting point there, Tom. We met just about everybody in the Bigfoot researchers that you were going to send out. We met them. We met Dave-O. We met a few others that didn't want us to say their names. We even met a few people who tagged along, but who we haven't met is you.
Well, but you know what? You will meet me, and I'll be out there, as well as all the other people out there on the Navajo Nation. And Dave-O will attest to that, along with John Lee. I've been out there 5-6 times. I'm coming back out again. And all I had to hear was, hey, we've got one here in the cave somewhere. And I would have been there that night. Trust me. Okay? But we got you on the watch. We got your brother on the watch. We got Dave-O and the rest of the guys there. You tell me you got something in a cave somewhere. You tell me something that it's out there now. I'll be there within 4 hours, son.
Well, we don't got it in a cave, but I think it might be in about, I don't know, 70 or 80 different kind of trailers that are by a wash that's leading near the near the canyon there. About 70 or 80 broke down trailers nobody uses, and then it got to about a wash that heads north up to Colorado, and then it's got a little way to head south all the way to the Salmon River, about a mile and a half to 2 miles. So,
well, all I'm saying is, Dave-O or the other guys down there besides yourself, tell me, hey, it's here, come a running. I'll be there within 4 hours. But it's something I want to tell you and your brother. Welcome to the world of Sasquatch, son.
Well, I thank you. We're proud to be in the world of Sasquatch now.
Yeah, I think you are. All right, well, listen, just keep us informed. Let us know. You know how to get a hold of me. You got my private number. God
yes,
bless you.
Yes, I do.
Just mute yourself up. We got a whole lot more show ahead of us, okay?
Okay.
Thanks so much, Marcus, your brother, and Dave-O.
Thank you.
Marco, let's go to commercial.
Okay, and Marcus, just hit your *6 button and you can listen to the rest of the show.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And back to you, Tom.
Unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, heard me talk about it? Get out there, run and get it. Now that you have a Bigfoot hoax, get it on our website, get it on Amazon.com. It's all out there. Told you before about it. Incredible. You know, Alex Hearn was out there with Mitch Waite this weekend, picked up their trail cameras up in the Mogollon Rim, and he's back to tell us everything that would happen. Alex, you out there, son?
Right here.
How you doing, son?
Doing good. Hey, wasn't that great how we put that together with Marcus in, less than an hour we had boots on the ground there with him.
Well, you know, I said it. I hope you were listening. You know, we've built the social network in the Bigfoot world here. No matter where there ever is a sighting, you know, we've got one of our compadres out there that can get to it before us, and before you know it, boom, it's happening.
Yeah, the call came in to you guys. Oops, sorry. Call came in to you guys, hit it over to me. We contacted Dave-O, John Lee, JC. Dave-O was home and ready to go. He was there after I talked to him. He was literally there in about 20 minutes. It was amazing. I was talking to Marcus, and he's like, here comes your buddy. He's here already. Didn't mean to interrupt, Pop.
And that's what it's all about, son. You know, when we've got this network, this net going across the globe. That's all we need. You know, I mean, we got New Mexico locked up. We got Arizona locked up. We got Texas locked up. You know, we've got Lee Joyner and his son. We got the Snake Man. Okay, and these guys will get to the bottom of it. They've been on enough expeditions. They know what the hell's going on, and they're out there to make things happen. And they can get there a lot sooner than we are, you know. We got Timmy out there in Florida. We got Chuck in Alabama. You know, we got Jan Allen down there in Georgia. You can't get any better than these people.
Bruce up in Montana, Wyoming?
Without a doubt. You know, the Shupe family, Schilt family up in Montana, you're exactly right. We got them in Michigan. We got them in Minnesota. We got them in New York. My God. It's unbelievable. So tell us what happened.
Well, we got in there early afternoon, spent a day exploring in the low levels. Am I still with you?
Yeah.
We spent a day We spent a day exploring in the lower levels. Then we set up camp. We set up the truck, aimed the cameras. We put some food together, and we settled down by the fire. It was real cold. We thought it was going to be around 35. It got much colder than that. I'm guessing about 25. He didn't have a temperature in his truck. But it was cold. We had the heater going. I had four shirts on and their you know, Arctic sleeping bag. It was still cold. I was shivering for a day and a half afterwards. But we had a good time. Now, while we were at the campfire, usually if we're going to have any action, you'll hear some whistling. Usually around 11, and it was a little late. It was probably around 12 o'clock, but sure enough, some whistling started. Mitch and I whistled, and it whistled back, did it a half a dozen times. Then it was quiet for a while. So after about 1:20, we went to bed. We had some research to go over in his truck. We went over a couple of videos while we watched the surveillance system, you know, while we were inside the truck, so we stayed up probably another hour. Finally fell asleep around 2:24. I think the surveillance system showed around 3:24 that a wild cat entered camp, rummaged around through the stuff, and we think, we couldn't quite tell from the surveillance when it happened, but it knocked a frying pan off the aluminum table. So the cat took off when it did that, and then a little while later, it came back, investigated again, lit the two frying pans, whatever it was doing. There was no food out, but the pans were out. And a little while later after that, the camera showed that another cat looked very similar to the first cat, came in, but much smaller. First one looked like it was, you know, about a third bigger than a domestic cat. So some kind of small wild cat, you know, ocelot, maracai, serval. Didn't really look like a serval or ocelot. The legs seemed too short. But we're going to examine the video as soon as Mitch sends it to me. He had actually leave earlier than he thought on his Utah trip, so he's already gone. As far as I know, I don't see it here in my email. He hasn't sent me the cutouts from the video that he promised. But a little while after that, we had a few deer enter camp. And they were running around the hills on the side of camp, and then they started chattering. Never heard deer make that sound before. It was a screechy, belching sound, but not, you know, like an elk makes. Kind of a higher pitched, of course, smaller animal. But I never heard a deer do that in the wild, and it seemed like something spooked them. You know, we were there. They were running around us. We were just standing still, so it wasn't us. Something else was up in the hills. I doubt that small cat would have spooked him. Could have been a bigger cat or something else. We fertilized all his bushes and trees that he's been doing for 2 years now. And then we went the next morning and picked up his game cameras. We saw some great footage of a tree that has been broken half, about 15 to 18 feet up. And I got some photos. I literally just finished doing the last bit of the brakes on my rig, so I didn't get to send them to Marco yet. I got some photos of this tree. It snapped, I mean, it's a big one. It's, you know, it's probably a 100-footer. And it snapped, you know, 15, 18, 20, 25 feet up. We didn't measure it. And the top of the tree, the other 70 feet, is laying T-boned on that tree. I've never seen one. It's probably a one in a million chance. And it's T-boned. It's, you know, 8 to 10 feet of the tree is on one side and the other 70 feet on the other side, or 50 feet, whatever it is. So really cool. I don't think any kind of creature could have done it. I think it's just, you know, a luck of the, you know, kind of like hitting the lottery, a one in a million chance. But it sure looks pretty peculiar, like an animal might have done it. All his cameras were maxed out. The batteries were dead. They had, you know, I don't know, 200 to 1,000 pictures on each. I They were maxed out. Now, one of the game cameras, we had something kind of peculiar happen. It was smashed in the front. Somebody or something smashed the lens. Looks like it'll still work, but it probably won't have the infrared power because it's right over the infrared eyes. And it's one of his good cameras, too. And the inside of that camera, and they're sealed. I mean, so he was going to go home and test it, but the inside of that camera was filled with a yellowy, oily liquid. And, I don't know if it could be rainwater. The rain's pretty wonderful up there in Clare. I guess it could be rainwater mixed with some sap, but I'm not sure how it would get in the camera. The rubber seal was fine. So he was going to swab it, go home, dry it out, and hose down that camera, see if it was waterproof. I don't know if somebody could have climbed up that tree. They were up about 15 feet high, used the spikes to go get them, and opened the camera and then, put some water in it or urinated in it. We get a lot of strange things in research, and that was one of them. It was certainly an oily substance. And it kind of made me feel like it was urine. We both washed it off our hands as quick as possible. Don't know how that could happen, though. And the camera was shut, too. So, logic tells me it must have leaked in there, but we haven't been able to prove that yet.
Wow. So what do you actually think this yellow stuff was?
Kind of had that greasy, make your skin crawl kind of feeling, like, do you ever touch something that the dog or the cat went on and you just know, you put it right down and throw it out? It had that kind of feeling to it, and it was greasy and oily, but liquid like water, and yellowish. So could have been rusty or just stained with the tree bark or the sap, but sap is sticky, not oily.
But it'll keep getting more interesting up there. Maybe this year might be the year, son.
It sure might be, If they come into his camp, he's got quite the setup going on with his surveillance. The one thing I didn't like, and we noticed a weakness in it, and I think it's just a setting, is it goes from camera to camera instead of doing a split screen. So technically, you miss, if something happens, you're missing 75% of what that camera catches because, it goes, and I'm making up the time, but I think it's about right on, about 10 or 15 seconds per camera, then it goes to the next camera. Well, when you find something, you only see 10, 15 seconds of it, and then 45 seconds later, that camera pops up. And, of course, the cat was gone at that time. Luckily, it came back. But one time, it looked like it was running right towards the truck, and the camera shut off. So we don't know what it did. The sound equipment sounded like it picked up something running on top of the camper. So I think it, ran right at the camper, ran up the side of the camper, over the roof, and off the other side. Just a wild cat. It'll do whatever it wants. Probably getting a quick smell of us or something. But it was, a slight weakness in his system, but it's an awesome system.
Yeah, you think it could have been a feral cat?
Well, yeah, it's obviously a feral cat of some kind. There is a couple of ranches up there. It could have just been a big domestic cat that's learned how to survive. Or, could be one of, Arizona's loaded with small wild cats, too, just like the rest of the Southwest. Texas even more so. So it could just be one of these smaller cats, Ocelots also thought to be extinct from Arizona, but one was hit by a car last year, So just when they said, when the Fish and Game, Game and Fish, AZ.gov, say something's extinct, just like recently with the Wildlife Department and the Eastern Puma, there's more sightings than ever of all these cats, and then Game and Fish will come out and say, the Eastern Puma is officially extinct from the eastern half of the United States. Well, ask any of the guys that we go with. Tim Fasano down there in Florida probably has some stories or could find us some. Chris Allen, seeing them all the time. You know, Steve in Kentucky, seeing them all the time. The cats are more abundant than ever. There's nobody hunting these cats anymore.
Hold on, Don. I want to tell you something. Okay.
I got a report yesterday from Fish and Game in California. And it was right there, not far from where I used to reside. And believe it or not, 3 blocks from where my place was, the cops and Fish and Game had a mountain lion treed in this woman's backyard. Okay? So I get the report. They called me and asked me if I had the expertise. And I says, gosh, if I was there, I'd love to be there. Get it out, because a mountain lion is the easiest thing in the world after you treat him to get him out, whether he be in the cave or up a tree. See? And if you bait him with a bunch of hounds, the hounds are on the bottom, they won't come down. Best thing to do is go up there with a long stick with a wire noose on it that you can control, put it around its neck, and just drag him back down off that tree, and he'll come, believe me. And because we've done it, you know, Peggy and I, Ivan and I, and you'll see it in The Legend of Bigfoot. You'll see it actually there. You'll see where we went into a cave, and we walked out with this thing, you know, with the noose around its neck, believe it or not, and the long stick, as a matter of fact. And I would have loved, except that they couldn't have anybody that could corral this thing, so they killed it. But guess what? These large cats are coming out of the mountains right now, and why? For food. There's not an abundance of food. So now they're coming down into the residential areas. They're smelling that cooking and stuff, smelling the bacon, the reason, as they say. Huh?
The reason they're doing it is exactly as you say. It's not so much that we're infringing on their habitat. It's that they're doing so well in their habitat that they're branching out now. You know, they would never come in a neighborhood if there wasn't another male cat or bigger cats in the other direction. So they're just moving away to claim their spot of land, just like a human would do. And we're in their way. They were here first.
You hit it right on the head, son. I'm very proud of you, with your analogy of this whole thing. I really am. Listen, stay tuned. We got Becky on the phone, and my gosh, I can't wait to get into her story. She's so articulate. She's so incredible with her story, and everybody, by, you know, popular demand from last week, this is, hey, we get her, and we got her now, and I know that she's working so hard. So let's go to commercial, mute yourself out. Thanks for a great story. And on the other side of commercial, we're going to have go up to Washington, listen to Becky Butello. It's on to you. Thanks, man. It's on to you, Marco.
I want all the viewers in the world today to know that this creature is out there. I have no doubt in my mind that there is a primate, a hominoid, a biped, something that walks on two all over this country. There's an unknown species out there, and we're going to find it. We've done vocalizations. We receive something in return, answering to it. We're going to be sharing our finds with the world, because what we've got now, no one else has. And the legend carries on by the work that we've done all these years.
Say it's not you.
Bigfoot lives in a movie
right now
at
www.searchingforbigfoot.com. Back to you, Tom. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you, the award-winning movie, Pocono Mountains Film Festival, Best Documentary, Best Director nominated, and it's the most authoritative Bigfoot movie that's out there. You know, you see all these things with got these fancy letters, a door before their name, D-R or
PhD postal digger after their name. It's all bullshit. You want to see reality? Want to take a ride down the path of it all with the real Bigfoot people? Go out there and see Bigfoot Lives. And I'm going to tell you, I've seen the dailies of Bigfoot Lives, too. When you see this movie, you're going to cringe. You're going to love it to death. It's a long time coming. It's so big, what I was told, that it's not going to be one disc. It's going to be two discs. So Bigfoot Lives, 2, get ready, because it's going to be a monumental stride. It's going to be bigger than we all thought. And I'm telling you, it's coming from you at you at all angles. Alabama, Florida, Indiana, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Tennessee, Kentucky, New York. States that were in the first one are going to be in the second one, and it's going to be action-packed, bonus-packed. Bigfoot Lives, too. Coming at you real soon, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, without any further ado, let's get up there to Washington and talk to one of my girls. I'm so proud of her. I have no idea. Becky Butello. Becky, you there?
Hi. Hello.
You there?
I am.
Okay. I know you've been working hard and everything, and probably didn't have any time to make it to the show, but we got you here. Thank you. By the way, you know by now that Don Monroe talked about you, gave you a bunch of accolades last week, and we've talked, and I'm just so proud of you. But we want to hear it from the horse's mouth. He got up at the bus depot, and you housed him, you fed him, and you took him out to your area. Come out and tell us all how this whole thing came about, okay? You got the floor, girl.
Well, I had had several phone conversations with him, and as it happened, he had business that he had to tend to in Seattle. And so when he mentioned this, there was kind of a mutual agreement for him to come down, and I offered to show him some of these areas that, and, you know, he conveyed some interest in that. So that's kind of how that happened. So we went to several areas. You know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to condense this because I know you're running out of time. But I took him to an area of the Fort. Remember, Tom, I've mentioned the Fort Lewis Reservation to you before.
Yes, you have.
This is an area of interest, you know, and I don't know if a lot of people are, you know, out there listening who understand that area or know anything about that area. The area that I showed him was about 2.5 miles from where my mom still lives, where I was raised, where I had my encounters, and where I used to ride my horse out in that reservation. And I used to hear all sorts of stuff out there. Howls, branches breaking. I mean, it was just something that happened all the time. Well, last summer, there is an area that is about a half-mile stretch, and it just so happened, and oddly enough, it appeared literally overnight. You know, one day you're driving, and you see fencing that has been placed there installed by the military. The next day, I'm going driving by that same area, and in 5 different areas, the fencing is just shredded. I mean, torn down, and it's pushed out, and the metal fence posts that the military installs where they come up and then angle in toward the reservation or in toward the ground, not outward, but inward, and strung with barbed wire. Well, all of that is bent. Yeah, all of that is like bent. The barbed wire, everything, the chain link fencing is just pulled down and pushed out. And I could hardly believe my eyes, because I pretty much know and have known for some time, because as I said, when I was a younger, I used to see just dozens of footprints all the time. And I know that they're out there. So I found that really interesting, but I was working, and I didn't have time to, you know, really stop and go in there and try to look for that. Also, you have to get a permit now to go out there. And presently, I'm going to see if I can get a permit to go out there because you used to be able to do that. You could go to the Fort Lewis base, get a permit, give them your driver's license number, your ID, you know, your stats, and then you call and you tell them when you're going out there and when you're coming back. And I'm not sure if they still do that, but that's something that I'm going to pursue and see if I can get out there and see something. So as you look into these areas, you know, where the fencing is ripped down, I'm noticing that the branches, there's branches that are just torn down, shredded, broken from 10 feet up in the air, some of them 12 feet up in the air, and they're just, it looks like a war zone, only right where those fencing areas are torn down. So about 2 or 3 days later after this first incident, military vehicles were all along there for like 2 days at a time trying to get all this fencing repaired and, you know, everything cleaned up. Well, it wasn't more than a couple of days later that those same places were torn down, shredded, and huge branches had been snapped and thrown over the top. Now, I don't know. You know, I have a certain mindset about things. And, you know, I suppose anybody could say, well, maybe there's, you know, some kids messing around in there. Well, you know, I suppose that's possible, but I can tell you one thing. I was right next to that fencing, and Don and I were examining this, and they were definitely from the outside in, and it took a lot of force. And there were other small trees and larger trees and huge branches snapped all the way. You could see it looked like a 30 or 40 feet swath inside the reservation. And I didn't want to get in trouble with MPs or anything, but I wanted so badly to go in there. So at this time, like I said before, I'm going to see if I can get some kind of a permit to go in there. But in any event, this happened 3 times where the fences were repaired and they were destroyed again. So they are down and have not been repaired, and the military finally gave up, I mean, which I find kind of fascinating. Since last summer, it's been this way now. So that was kind of interest, so I took them there. And then we went out toward the Roy area, which I've seen a lot of stick structures and tree twists and some interesting things out there. And I drove down this one road way back out in there, and I found an area that I wanted to show him. And we found actually 2 places where it appeared that a sort of blind, if you will, was being formed, where branches had been torn down and placed and stacked up against, you know, kind of in a teepees-type structure. So I don't know, you know, we all have our theories as to what they're doing with this. You know, it could be blinds, you know, to kill deer. It could be to hide. It could be for both. But in any event, you know that it was not, it didn't get that way by itself, that it was made. So, and it has to be made with something with hands. So I took some, oh, by the way, Tom, I took some pictures of that. Okay, so then the really interesting thing that I want to talk about, though, is that I ended up going down to, or I myself had made the decision to go down to Ording. And I went to that Carbon River. And this was about 3 miles from where I had seen that tree peeker. Alex, if you're out there listening, you know what I'm talking about, where I had seen that on my girlfriend's property, Jennifer Stone. For those of you who had heard this story once before, you know what I'm talking about. Well, so we were walking along this Carbon River once I parked my car, and I think we got out there about probably about a quarter of a mile, I'm thinking. And interesting enough, just kind of by the way, we found two hides. They were cow hides, and there was no blood on them. There was no bones, no organs, no head, no legs. Zero. There was nothing. And I was the one that found them. I went over and I turned them over. I literally picked it up because I was interested. So I picked the hides up. And the interesting thing about it is those hides were fresh. And I don't know I don't know how to describe that because, you know, I'm not an avid hunter, you know, and I don't know how to explain this, but the fat was still moist. on the underneath of that hide, but there wasn't a drop of blood. There was no blood on the ground anywhere. So whoever did whatever, it was carried over there and thrown there. For what reason? I have no idea. But it's pretty interesting. Now, also, there were two hunters down there with a German short hair and a another hunter with a lab. And neither one of those dogs were on leashes. They were loose. And they would not go near those hides, which I found fascinating. It was very apparent because I was watching. I'm an animal person, and I was watching those animals, and they would not go near those hides. And there was no smell either, Tom. There was no smell on those hides at all. So, you know, these are some of the little things that I pay attention to. I don't claim to be anything other than what I am, but I just, I really notice, like, to me, some of the little things are the ones that are so significant, those kind of facts, if you pay attention to the small things. So, in any event, I took pictures of those hides also, and then we moved on. When I got down a little bit further, I had made a decision to go down, actually, onto, right next to the river. And it was flowing pretty good. It had been raining hard out there, and there was evidence of some flooding sometime recently. And I found something interesting, which I also took pictures of. And it's just a small thing, but it's very interesting. There was, in a sandy area, like a little sandbar, all by itself, three little stones, and they were placed right next to each other in this little arch. They were like a little arc. And then there was this tiny little piece of wood that I'm assuming was carried probably 100 feet from an area that had been fenced in. It looked like some kind of a wooden structure had been torn down. And I was thinking, well, maybe it came from that. I was just speculating. But right next to that was these two tiny little pine cones. And I took pictures. I have two pictures of this. And I don't know what to make of that. I'm just putting it out there. But it was by it. And go ahead.
This is Mark there. On their trails. It's happened many, many times in the past. So what you want to do is send them over to me. I find it in great interest. I'll tell you this. We're going to have you back next week if you can make it. We're past the hour. We're overdue. But you are such an amazing guest. I've got to have you back next week. And for those who are new with us, Becky is the girl from the way beginning, I don't know how many years ago, that she's seen one of these creatures up close and personal while she was doing her dishes, thing came to her window. Remember that encounter?
Oh, I'll never forget that encounter as long as I live, because it looked me right in the eye.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week for those who are just coming in and joining us and don't know who you are. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank all my guests.
Thank you.
The globe. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
You're listening to Bigfoot.
Ivan was a no bear tracker. Tom was a man with dreams.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Marco Bill, and that's the Bigfoot Live radio show for this week. All of us on the Bigfoot Live network would like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests for joining us tonight for an exciting evening of talk show entertainment where you, the listeners, become a part of our on-the-air adventure. And we'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for sharing our adventure with us. Join us again next Wednesday evening for another exciting hour of Bigfoot Live radio show with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. Until then, this is Marco Bill saying good night, and be good, be safe, and be here next week. See you then.
Reason 5.